Welcome to Psyched, a podcast about psychiatry that covers everything from the foundational to the cutting edge, from the popular to the weird. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey everybody, this is David Carrion.
And this is Jesse Gold.
And this is Psyched, a psychiatry podcast. Today we have Emmeren Mayer on with us. He was born in a small town in Bavaria, where his family ran a confectionery business since 1873. After deciding against taking over the family business, he finished medical school at Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, completed his residency training at Vancouver General Hospital in Vancouver, before moving to Los Angeles. Dr. Mayer is a professor in the Department of Medicine, Physiology, and Psychiatry at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, and executive director of the G. Oppenheimer Center for Neurobiology of Stress and Resilience, and co-director of the CURE Digestive Diseases Research Center at UCLA. Dr. Mayer, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be on the show.
So, you've done a fascinatingly broad set of work over your career, looking at your research interests from traditional healing to hypnosis to gut microbiology. Sort of, how did you get such diverse research interests?
Well, there was one common thread that goes through all of this from the very beginning, and that is I've always been interested in the interaction between the mind, the brain, and the body, and just have pursued this from college on, and so there is certainly a straight line going through all of my visits at different topics within this area. I think right now, the sort of looking at the mind brain gut microbiome interaction, so the closing integrating all these elements into one, and that's in some ways really been my interest from the very beginning.
So say more about that with the mind gut connection. How do you conceive of the gut, and how is there a connection?
Well, I mean, I've been interested in brain-gut interaction for the better part of my career. And, that topic was in some ways relegated to studying a disease called irritable bowel syndrome, because that was sort of a classic entity where you had psychological comorbidity, GI symptoms. Psychological interventions were beneficial. And then only about, I would say, 7 years ago, I gradually developed this interest in including the gut microbes in this communication. So I think right now people are getting so excited about the microbes themselves. I mean, there's always been this very intricate bidirectional communication between the brain and the gut. There's many interesting cells in the gut. But the microbes now play a role in using these various communication channels in the gut, from the gut to the brain, to be included in this dialogue. Interestingly, there has never been really great interest of people outside very narrow area of so-called neurogastroenterologists until the microbiome arrived. Now, it's almost like everybody has become a gut microbiome expert, a brain-gut microbiome expert. There's many books written on this topic. The lay media loves it. And for me, it's nice because at this stage of my career, I get invited to all kinds of meetings outside of gastroenterology, including the APA meeting.
So you said something that was rather astonishing, I think, to most people, that there's a dialogue between the microbes and the person, or the brain. I mean, are there really like signals sent back and forth? I mean, how do you justify saying that this is communication?
If you go back in evolution, you'll find that microbes were obviously the dominant life form on planet Earth for billions of years, 4.5 billion years. And then at some point, there was a decision made by some algae in the oceans to settle inside the digestive system of a primitive marine animal, the hydra. that animal itself was a floating digestive tube with a nerve net around it. Very similar, actually, to our GI tract. So our GI tract started, like the earliest forms of life were GI tracts with an attached nervous system around it. The microbes started to living inside that system and used their own communication signals that they had developed over 4.5 billion years in the oceans to start communicating with the nerve cells of these floating digestive tubes. So that actually explains a lot why the gut and the brain are so closely connected. And it also explains why the microbes, have developed this ability not just to communicate with the host, but also to most likely exchange genes, this process, lateral gene transfer, to the host. And you can almost assume that the similarity of some neuroactive substances that the microbes can produce that we know today, like GABA and tryptophan metabolites, were actually transferred then to the enteric nervous system of these marine animals and were really the origin of our own neurotransmitters ultimately. So it's a very interesting story, which I think is quite convincing in terms of why that is happening.
Wait, so the thought is that the bacteria are sending their own genes into the host organism, and the host organism is incorporating those and then producing those things that the bacteria want?
Yes, so that's the assumption, and that probably explains why there is this common language, this common biological language, which goes from the microbes to various cells and receptors in the gut, including nerve cells. And also, since a lot of microbes live on plants, I mean, many plants have, homologous structures that sort of resemble some of our neurotransmitters. So there's clearly a certain universality in terms of these signals. And the origin of all this is most likely the microbes. They had 4.5 billion years to develop that language, have 400 times more genes than we humans have, and they have the ability, this ongoing evolution. I mean, this is not a static system, so there's constant selection, and that may be one of the advantages of having these microbes inside of us, because you can adapt to many things much better than our human system could adapt.
So what you're saying is there's things that the microbes signal for in us, like what kind of things would a microbe want our brain to be thinking or doing, or can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. I think right now it's more speculative, the answers. So somebody has suggested that, the microbes may actually be able to hack into our reward system and get us to do things, particularly to eat things, that is beneficial for their own growth. And that has not been proven yet. I mean, there's a recent study in fruit flies where it's been shown that that microbes are able to change the behavior of these fruit flies. I mean, obviously in humans and even in rodents, we don't have this yet, but there's an interesting possibility, for example, in obesity, where people develop this craving for high-fat, high-sugary foods, that the normal composition of our microbes changes in a way that certain strains and taxa start dominating, that then send signals to our brain into the reward system that makes us crave for these particular food items. Almost like it becomes like a parasitic relationship. It's no longer the symbiosis that exists normally, that it's like everything is beneficial for both players. In this case, the microbes then would take over in terms. It's really speculation, But it's intriguing because we don't have the clear answer to this. Why would they, what would they would like to tell our nervous system? So I guess it's still really a mystery.